This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into Market Talk once again here today. Thanks for joining us as we're broadcasting live for the third and final day of the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to be here again. Thanks for joining us. We got a busy show planned for you here today as we wrap up things at the Farm Progress Show. Coming up, we're going to have a couple different conversations on tap. Mac Marshall, United Soybean Board, he's going to stop by and join us and talk a little bit about what's going on in the soybean industry and in the soybean markets as well. And Mac, of course, with the United Soybean Board and United States Soybean Export Council, USEC. So we're going to talk to him. Coming up here a little bit later in the show. Also, a few different conversations I've had here throughout my time at Farm Progress this week. Harold Woolley, Vice President of the National Corn Growers Association. We're going to get caught up with him coming up as well. Also had a great conversation with Greg Frenzel at Kloss about some of their new equipment they have on display here at the show this year. We're going to get to that coming up as well. I'm going to try to sneak in Brian Doherty at Total Farm Marketing today as well and get some comments on the market trade from Brian coming up here later in the show as well. Earlier this week, though, I ran into Kevin McNew, Chief Economist at Farmers Business Network, FBN. He's been hearing a lot of conversations about fertilizer and the price of fertilizer, cost of input, and looking at margins for not only this new crop, but into 2023 as well. Here is that interview with Kevin McNew.
You know, driving around the grounds, running around, I run into some familiar faces. Well, I found one, Kevin McNew, Chief Economist with Farmers Business Network, FBN. Kevin, good to see you here on the ground in Iowa. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Good to see you, Jesse, at this wonderful farm show in Boone, Iowa.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Awesome weather, and I'm sure a lot of conversations that you are getting to have with farmers in attendance. I'm having some of the same. And I know you and I were chatting a little bit here before we went on the air. There's a lot surrounding fertilizer, nitrogen, natural gas. We're hearing all these news stories, especially coming out of Europe right now. So talk to me a little bit. What are you seeing? What are you talking to farmers about when it comes to, you know, say fertilizer and nitrogen in general here as we head into the fall, Kevin?
Yeah, you know, talking to farmers in the tent this morning, a lot of sticker shock as they're pricing anhydrous for this fall. And, you know, what's sad is farmers are like getting different deals just across the road from each other. You know, we're hearing those conversations that it's all kind of like hush hush of who gets what deal. And you know, at FBN, our role and our initiative is about price transparency. So, you know, I don't like to hear that as a marketplace situation, but what I can tell farmers is get aggressive about locking in nitrogen because it's not going to get cheaper as we get fully into fall. You know, there's a big world shift going on around nitrogen and nitrogen pricing that I think is going to have big impacts.
Well, and you mentioned that world shift. We're seeing and hearing about all the stories, all these plants in Europe shutting down because the cost to produce has just gotten so high. And that ties into natural gas prices, which are skyrocketing in Europe. But we think about the global supply of certain fertilizers and these plant shutdowns. One has to wonder what's the ripple effect going to be or not going to be for U.S. farmers, Kevin?
Yeah, great question, Jesse. I mean, let me put, first of all, the natural gas price gyration in perspective, because I don't think most farmers truly understand. We see our markets, and our markets for natural gas are up about 400% in the last 2 years, and that sounds really painful. But in Europe, natural gas prices in the last 2 years are up 3,600%. A phenomenal price increase. And so you're right, all these fertilizer producers, these ammonia plants, especially in Germany and other areas where they have no ability to get outside liquefied natural gas are shutting down. Europe, in combination, is the third largest nitrogen producer in the world. And fortunately, U.S. is number one. So we are blessed with a big reservoir of natural gas inventories that we can draw upon. Doesn't mean our prices are going to be cheap, because we live in a global market where we're shipping out a lot of liquefied natural gas to satisfy some of Europe's shortfall. So we're going to feel some pain, but the implication is the world is going to be really challenged to grow corn like it used to. And U.S. farmers are going to be in the right place at the right time.
Well, and I've been starting to hear some conversations as well. This ties in with fertilizer and locking in some of those prices now, especially as you look, for that fall application, or you're looking ahead to 2023 and that crop. And I'm starting to hear some more conversations, some growers saying, well, maybe I should lock in a little bit of 2023 crop, corn, beans, wheat, etc., because I know my fertilizer cost, I can manage my margin even if I'm locking in stuff right now. Is that some of the same conversations you're starting to hear about?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always good to look at margin. Know what your costs are, know what your price to sell is. If you can lock in a positive profit, that's never a bad decision. But I think there's a lot of farmers who are not going to do that. And I think this is the year where you really want to be aggressive about locking in inputs, especially fertilizer. Maybe not so much Kim. I don't think we're going to have the Kim tragedy like we did in 2021-22. But I think fertilizer is always going to be, in the next couple growing seasons, a challenge from a price standpoint. So I do think locking that in. And I think corn market is going to take the dominant role versus beans and wheat. Wheat and beans have been the leader in the last 6 months to a year. And I think that's gonna fade as we see corn take on more a dominant role because of the problems with corn production costs, with problems in the U.S. corn crop we're talking about. And we're already gearing up for South America's growing season, Jesse. As you know, La Nina, 3 years in a row, doesn't spell good things for Argentinian and Southern Brazil farmers.
No, it does not. And we're watching what's going to happen in South America closely. And as you mentioned, that declining corn crop here in the U.S. And I agree with you. The conversations I'm having, the things I'm seeing just in the markets and the charts, it feels like this corn market's got some upside potential. Maybe, I wonder, near term, got to get into harvest and get through some of that harvest pressure and see what really is out there in the field. But I think after that, towards the end of this year, Kevin, this corn market, oh boy, I think there's some bullish momentum here.
Yeah, I agree, Jesse. I think this is not a lightning bull market. In other words, we're not going to see a huge leap up anytime soon. But I think there's little downside risk. And I don't say that very often. I've been in this business for all of my life and 30 years as a professional. Balancing risk is important. But I think if I'm a farmer, I want to recognize that there's a lot more upside potential and risk on the input cost side, and upside potential on grain prices. We saw that this year. Corn back down to 550, but it didn't retreat significantly lower. I don't think it needs to go below where it's traded here recently. And I think, as we get into 23, we'll start having those discussions around corn flipping out or losing corn acres this year. I think producers are probably going to try and come back strong with wheat and wheat beans in those southeast acres where they can buy them.
Well, Kevin, I appreciate a few minutes of your time. I know it's a busy time here at the show in Boone, the Farm Progress Show, but appreciate a few thoughts, and I know we'll be talking again real soon. With that, though, I'll let you go. Enjoy the rest of the Farm Progress Show.
Thank you, Jesse. Always a pleasure.
Coming up, more for the Farm Progress Show with a conversation with Harold Woolley of the National Corn Growers Association. Back after this here on Market Talk.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here. Jesse Allen with you, broadcasting live from day three of the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. As we wrap things up, it's been a beautiful week here in Boone, Iowa, and a ton of conversations we've had, and we're not going to get to them all today. We're going to have more coming up the next few days here on the show. But I did have one that I wanted to highlight on today's show, talking with Harold Woolley of the National Corn Growers Association, Vice President of NCGA, a Minnesota farmer. And I talked to Harold about a lot of different issues impacting corn farmers and a lot of discussions he's having here during the Farm Progress Show. Here's my conversation with Harold Woolley from NCGA.
there's no shortage of topics for us to talk about, especially when it comes to corn and it comes to the NCGA. I think first, top of mind, we look at this growing season. We look at some of the different challenges we've faced and then think about some of the different issues going on in D.C. when it comes to regulation. Atrazine, I know, is a big thing with corn farmers right now. Cost of inputs, et cetera, fertilizer. I mean, you name it. There's a lot that's kind of an issue right now. What are your thoughts on that? What are you hearing from fellow growers here during the Farm Progress Show about some of those issues?
Well, you're absolutely right. We need the tools in our toolbox. Atrazine's one of those that's coming under fire right now. NCGA instituted a national call to action to respond to EPA's request for comments on their change up in atrazine regulation. So I encourage all corn farmers to go to NCGA's website and get their comments made to EPA. We need to let them know how important atrazine is to our production system.
What about the cost of inputs? I know that's got a lot of growers nervous, especially fertilizer, thinking about all the issues we're seeing globally with fertilizer production, prices, etc. What are you hearing as you walk around the grounds here this week on that respect? I've heard plenty of talk about fertilizer.
It's a true pronged problem, price and then supply. I think our suppliers, our co-ops are reluctant to price product that they don't have in hand. They don't know what it's going to cost them to replace the product that they have on hand now. That could be a real problem for us going forward. I know my son did some cash flow projections for the 23 crop, and he notified me most expensive fertilizer we've ever had on the farm on a per acre basis. So
a lot to look at there, and I know a lot of tough decisions are going to be made here in the next couple of months. Let's turn our attention to biofuels. We've seen, obviously, this year with everything with inflation, we saw fuel prices shoot up, diesel prices shoot up. You think about the diesel use on the farm, you got to have fuel to produce a crop and work the farm. We've seen prices come back down a bit, but just looking at ethanol and the all the work surrounding what is going on with ethanol and the industry. I know we've had these issues with California come up the last couple of weeks and their move to, basically electric vehicles by 2035 is a lot of it. There's a lot surrounding the biofuel situation as well. Catch us up on some of the latest. What's some of the things that NCGA is really looking at?
Well, the first thing was year-round E15 sales. We had those in place, and then the courts took it away from us. And fortunately, President Biden is now under executive order allowing summertime use of E15. We need to fix this legislatively. I don't see the current system as being a long-term fix for that. Our retailers need to be able to market E15 all year round. Our consumers have enjoyed significant savings throughout the summer when they fill up with unleaded 88, or if they're fortunate enough to have a flex fuel vehicle when they can fill up with E85. Tremendous savings there for our consumers with a high quality, good for the environment fuel. So that's first thing we need to get fixed. Our NCGA's number one priority, though, is getting the Next Generation Fuels Act passed. Senator Klobuchar from Minnesota and Grassley introduced that legislation in the Senate. It had previously been introduced in the House, so now we have the two companion bills. We're working hard to get more co-sponsors in both houses. We need our farmers to tell their representatives and senators, this is a good bill. This is something that the biofuels industry needs. It's something that rural America needs. It's something that's going to be good for consumers. If we can get this passed, we will solve the year-round E15 problem. We will allow engine manufacturers to build the small displacement, high compression, turbocharged engines that can use the high octane that is in higher level blends. We need to have this. We're rapidly going carbon neutral in our ethanol production system. We can be a part of the system to decarbonize our transportation system.
Fantastic stuff, Harold. Before I let you go, any other final thoughts, anything else you could think of that you've been hearing about from growers here during Farm Progress Show, or just anything in general going on with NCGA right now?
Well, you know, we've had some politicians show up here at Farm Progress, and they've been talking quite obviously about the next farm bill, the 23 farm bill. A lot of issues that we could talk about there. We need to protect crop insurance, we need to promote trade, and we need to have an effective safety net. So those are the three items that NCGA is advocating for in the farm bill.
And a lot of discussions that we're going to keep having on that the next couple of months ahead into 2023. With that, Harold, I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us here, Farm Progress Show, and we'll look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks, Jesse.
And again, that's Harold Woolley with NCGA. Another conversation I had, it is the Farm Progress Show after all. We got to talk progress in agriculture. Kloss has some new equipment out. Greg Frenzel walked me through one of their new tractor models. Here is that interview.
What two new models do you guys have? Tell us about this new exciting stuff.
Yeah, the two new models that we have on the Axion series is an Axion 930 TT and an Axion 960 TT. The 930 has 350 horsepower rated engine, and then the 960 has 440 horsepower rated engine. And the TT stands for TerraTrak, and that's what's new on this model. So you kind of mentioned the Axion, the two new models. We've had the Axion 900 series in the wheel version front and back, and in that we have five different models, and it consists of the same engine as an FPT engine that these two new models have, as well as a CVT transmission, which is very efficient and unique here. So the thing that sets these two models apart is the TerraTrak, and mm-hmm. with that TerraTrak, we've brought over the TerraTrak from our combines that we've had for over 25 plus years. So all that technology and development, we've brought that over here, and we've kind of tailored it. So on the combines, it's more for carrying weight and flotation, where this one is more for pulling tractive forces and getting the power to the ground while reducing the compaction. So we've made some changes to the front and rear bogey wheels, and we've increased the wrap on the rear driven bogey wheel to be able to get more surface area. And we've also, as you can kind of see, is there's a spoke design on the rear axle that allows more leading edges and surface areas on the pads that are on the wheel to then grab and dig on the friction force of the friction drive track.
Well, I think as well, I think you kind of hit it maybe there explaining this, but obviously these TerraTraks, you know, bringing this technology over, it's fantastic stuff for the Axion line of tractor. You know, you hit on a lot of things, but what really sets Kloss apart from the competition? I'd have to think some of this technology is just one of many.
Yeah, for sure. And the one thing that I'd like to mention is the suspension on the track. So it's a fully suspended track. It pivots about the center axle, but then it also has a hydropneumatic suspension that I'm going to quote unquote makes it smile and frown up and over the berms and ditches in the field. So it doesn't go up the berm and drop over the front. It's a really nice smooth ride, and it's suspended, so it's very nice and smooth across the field.
I'd have to think farmer sitting in the cab, he's got to like a nice smooth ride across the field that may be a little bumpy there as he's going.
Yes, he does. And then you can also combine that with the standard 4-point suspended cab and the air seat as well that's included in standard.
Well, fantastic. Well, if farmers want to learn more, I'm sure contacting their local Kloss dealer or going online, probably two great ways to start, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. So they can contact their local Kloss dealer, but then also the Kloss.com website to go learn more about this tractor. All the information's out there. So
fantastic. Well, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us here at Farm Progress Show and telling us more about these great new tractors from Kloss.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. Thanks for interviewing and coming to learn about our new products.
And again, that's Greg Frenzel of Kloss joining me here during the Farm Progress Show. Before that, Harold Woolley of the NCGA. Coming up next, we're going to have a conversation about the soybean industry. Mac Marshall with the United Soybean Board and U.S. Soybean Export Council. He joins us next, back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk here live at the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. And we've been catching up with a lot of familiar faces, and one of them who happens to be here, Mac Marshall with the United Soybean Board. Mac, it's good to see you, buddy.
Hey, likewise, Jesse. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate the time. Let's chat a little bit. Farm Progress Show has been a lot of fun. I know you're getting to experience it on day number three, and I'm sure you'll be having a lot of conversations about what's going on with the soybean markets. And, you know, in general, looking at this week, we've seen some sales here, daily export sales, 3 days in a row now, unknown in China. The soybean market, though, feels like it's been under a little bit of pressure on the futures board here, just with some of those big yield ideas that are out there across the country. What are you kind of seeing as far as the markets go here as we wrapped up August and now moved into September?
Well, I think this year has been really intriguing from a market standpoint. There's been so much volatility. Prices have been high. And when that's the case, you do tend to see, you know, pretty volatile swings back and forth. We've been in a weather market for much of the summer. You know, you mentioned we've got these high yield estimates, which I actually think is a really great thing from a, you know, global food security standpoint. South America, of course, had a pretty rough crop last year, so the world's really been clamoring for the U.S. to deliver a strong crop this year, and it looks like we'll probably produce a record. And I think, you know, you mentioned those flash sales to China and unknown destinations that have been rolling in. That's really exciting, too. We've got a really robust order book for the new marketing year, which, of course, starts today. And seeing, you know, that forward demand there is, I think, really important. You know, China's imports this last year were down year on year. They were able to source less than Brazil, or less from Brazil, over the summer. And moreover, they're, you know, I think, combating a drought at the moment. So, you know, sourcing those U.S. beans is really critical. But that's not just for China. It's for diversified markets around the world that our teams at USEC are, you know, really striving to continue to grow and diversify.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned the new marketing year starting up today, and this is kind of typically, is it that window where we start to see some of those export sales really start to pick up here as we move, you know, kind of right into early harvest time period?
Yeah, no, there's always movement around this time of year when you're bridging from the old crop marketing year to the new crop marketing year. You see some of that forward roll. There's always outstanding sales from the prior year that will roll in, too. Mm-hmm. But, you know, overall, I think it positions us well in terms of the, you know, total level of foreign demand that we're seeing here. But, of course, it's not just about foreign demand, although we are, you know, generally an export-oriented commodity. We've got a lot of exciting demand developments happening here at home. And I think probably the most disruptive for, you know, the soybean complex has really been emerging over the last couple of years, and that's a lot of demand from California for renewable diesel, which is, you know, a newer biofuel that is, you know, has a potential to, you know, replace petroleum diesel. It's chemically equivalent to that. And, you know, the most important feedstock for that on a volume basis, or will pretend to be, is soybean oil. You know, certainly critical for traditional biodiesel, but seeing this opportunity to get up to, you know, B100 and, you know, advanced decarbonization in the country, and have soybean oil play a critical role in diversifying our, you know, energy base in the U.S., is incredibly exciting.
Well, and you mentioned renewable diesel, and we've seen some other soy-based products on display here at the Farm Progress Show this week. The acre of asphalt they have in the Varied Industries tent, where we're seeing these different companies with, you know, making rubber now out of soybean oil for tires and things like that. So, yeah, finding a lot of new uses for soybean oil and soybeans in general. It's just amazing, and it's awesome to see some of that on display here at the Farm Progress Show.
It absolutely is, and I know this is going to make for amazing radio, but I actually have a pair of soy-based Goodyear tire, Goodyear Skechers shoes on right now. So, you know, we even have a role in apparel. And we talk about soy's versatility, its role in providing, you know, ingredients for food, feed, fuel, and, you know, fiber here. Really, you look at the hierarchy of human needs, everything we need, food, clothing, shelter, as well as, you know, transportation, I think is also critical too. And having soy play a role in all of those critical channels for people, you know, domestically and abroad, I think really underscores not just the versatility of the bean, but the importance in continually reinvesting and discovering new pathways for utilizing and harnessing the power of it.
And I think on the soy product side as well, not just meal, but not just oil, but bean meal as well, crush margins are remaining very strong. And that's just another part of the entire soy complex kind of puzzle right now that's looking really, really solid.
It absolutely is. And I think where we are now, where we've had this demand from the energy space that has, you know, caused the markets to, you know, I think really, or it's played a role in markets reevaluating the value of oil. And now we're in a position where historically meal, which has carried, you know, 2/3 of the, you know, enterprise crush value, now we're seeing meal and oil, you know, closer to parity, which is, I think, very exciting because it means the two co-products are really, you know, carrying the value of beans together. And you know, you mentioned crush margins, right? Margins are going to look stronger when you have, you know, two products that are both, you know, highly valued by end users. And what's especially exciting about that is we're also seeing this wave of private sector investment between, you know, energy companies and traditional ag producers coming together, engaging in joint ventures such as Chevron and Bunge to expand crush here domestically in the United States to produce more meal, to produce more oil. And I think that's exciting for customers domestically and internationally. You know, that oil, we're going to continue to service our food channels, but it's also got those, you know, energy and other industrial use applications. And the meal, look, Animal Ag is our number one overall customer, both domestically and abroad. So having, you know, more of that high-quality U.S. origin meal out there, great opportunity for Animal Ag producers domestically and, you know, I think more customers around the globe to experience the advantages of U.S. origin meal.
I've heard a lot of conversations here at the show this week, Mac, about the high cost of inputs, especially going into 23. We think fertilizer for corn and wheat. And I wonder what that's going to do to maybe shape up next year's acreage battle, depending on where soybeans sit on the board price-wise. Are we going to see more acres get driven to soybeans versus corn or wheat if some of those inputs continue to move higher and higher and the margin just isn't there for farmers?
You know, I think that was a really relevant question. Even as we're, you know, in planting season in fall 21, as farmers were looking and making their crop plans for 22 planting, you know, this was a year where you looked at corn prices on the board, you looked at soy prices on the board, you looked at wheat prices on the board. You know, prices for all three of those major row crops were incredibly competitive. But the question was, okay, you're getting the signals to plant more and more corn, but, you know, the margins aren't there because of the pressure on the fertilizer. Same thing with beans and crop protection products. Like, you know, farmer margins, you look at the price of the, you know, of the physical commodity, and you're like, okay, well, farmer margins must be good. No, that's not the case. They're under tremendous amounts of pressure from everything you listed there. Fertilizer, crop protection, seed, machinery, and of course, energy as well, though we've seen those costs mitigate recently. That plays a critical role in cropping decisions. But if I'm thinking back a year ago when we were starting to see those fertilizer prices really, you know, start to spike, you know, a lot of the farmers that I talked to saying, okay, well, is this going to, you know, cause a wholesale shift in your acreage? You're going to move over to beans a lot more? It's like, well, agronomically, we need to run that corn-soy rotation. We need to keep things as close to 50-50 as possible, which I think is really important to note because farmers aren't just looking at economic returns. Farmers are stewards of the land and are looking to make the most agronomically sound decisions as well. And I think that's really, really critical, you know, particularly from a checkoff perspective. You know, we're a strategic organization that is focused on the life of the U.S. soybean industry and its role in advancing solutions domestically and abroad for every life, every day. And that takes a long-term horizon. Mm-hmm. And I love to say nobody farms for a single season, right? Farmers, you know, steward the land you know, because it's the right thing to do, but it's also beneficial for your operations longer term. So when you hear farmers who see the market maybe calling for more of one crop, but it's going to throw off that agronomic rotation, you know, it creates a little disjointedness, but they want to do the right thing for the land.
Very true. Mac, before we run out of time, any of the final thoughts you have for us here on the show today?
Well, if I may just put a plug in, on September 12th, we've got, of course, the USDA is issuing its World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. That September report is always important, especially for beans. That's when you have updates likely to the yield figures. Of course, those have been looking strong thus far, but we could see updates there. And we're doing a webcast at 7 p.m. Central. Registration is available on the USEC.org website. And I'm really excited about this one. Not just for our guest, Randy Mittelstaff from RJ O'Brien, but we're also going to have a panel of three farmers on to talk about how their crops are unfolding and what they're seeing. You know, it's one thing for, you know, me, I'm an analyst. I've never grown anything except, you know, crabgrass and clover. you know, it's one thing for me to kind of talk about this, you know, broadly what I'm, reading in news clips and what I'm seeing in markets, what I'm hearing from surveys. But it's quite another to hear directly from farmers, too. So, you know, we're excited to put this program on and, have people tune into it.
Fantastic. Well, Mac, I appreciate a few minutes of your time here during the Farm Progress Show. Great to catch up with you in person this time. It's been a little while. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Hey, absolutely, Jesse. Thank you for having me and looking forward to the next time.
And again, that is Mac Marshall with United Soybean Board and U.S. Soybean Export Council joining me here on Market Talk live at the Farm Progress Show in Bood, Iowa, as we work through the show today and wrap things up for day number three. Coming up next, we're going to take a look at Thursday's market action. We're going to get connected with Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing, and get his thoughts on what we saw in Thursday's trade action. That's coming up next. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now as we take a look at the market trade on Thursday, we welcome in our good friend Brian Doherty with Total Farm Marketing. And Brian, good afternoon to you, sir. I know I am busy wrapping up the Farm Progress Show, and you are busy watching a lot of risk off in these markets today, Brian.
We are, and what a great time of year, and hopefully it was a great show, and just, you know, maybe in some ways getting back to normal and getting out sort of in sunshine and people, so.
Definitely,
and that's my sort of way to chew up some time and avoid the markets today, so. Yeah, pretty rough. Down 12 or so in corn, 28, 30 in beans, same thing in wheat, more than 30 in wheat, just a real risk off. Big story prior this week is just continued strength in the U.S. dollar. Expectations for higher interest rates, that's driving the dollar upward. And it looks like the investment community is quickly taking a defensive tone because of that. Crude oil down kind of big here this week as well. So kind of a pretty rough week. You got harvest coming up. You've got Ukraine corn sort of on fire sale. They're trying to sell corn cheaply. They're trying to generate some money. So you've got all of that, and really you just kind of ran out of bullish news after the Pro Farmer Tour last week. The market kind of bought the rumor, and then it bought the fact, and then it just kind of ran out of gas.
Well, I know as well, Brian, you know, yesterday was the end of the month, and one had to wonder if maybe we were seeing just some book squaring leading to some of the pressure yesterday, but then the follow through today with a new month, I wonder, you know, heading to a long holiday weekend, what could we maybe see Friday? What is this market picture going to look like as we move into the holiday weekend, we wonder, Brian?
Yeah, great question. And great observation. We do have the three-day holiday. So when you kind of look at all of it together, you got a higher dollar, holiday coming up, impending harvest, corn cheaper elsewhere in the world, energy prices on the decline, kind of just go on and on and on. It's kind of easy to see what, maybe with some hindsight, why the markets are down. Technically, no damage to the corn chart whatsoever. Had a good surge higher here, correction back, held the 10-day moving average today. If prices were to break down a little bit further, could push toward 647 on December. That was a low from the from August 26th, currently at 658. You know, it would, you just got to think common sense here. We started here in the middle of the month at near $6, went up to a high of, I think it was 680, but let's just call it 684. A correction back to 650 makes sense to me. It's not what I want. I kind of want the market to keep going higher for corn producers. But it also gives end users who are kind of reflecting on this pro farmer, this digital DTN number, and some private estimates as people walk the fields that, you know, we need to probably step it up a little bit. I'm not trying to be an alarmist here, but if the U.S. comes up with a yield somewhere in that 168 area, if that's the true yield, either demand has to shift a lot or we're going to have to ration the supply somewhere. That's just not enough corn inventory in the United States. Every bin will be filled full and farmers will be really stingy, reluctant sellers. So I am a macroeconomic guy, big picture. This is getting precariously tight in the Northern Hemisphere.
Very true. Soybeans Thursday at the close, November beans, especially breaking through that kind of that key $14 level. What's that chart looking like to you? Do you think we got a lot more downside pressure there, or is this maybe a spot where we could find some, maybe find some support here after today?
Great question. Let's step back a little bit. If you're a macro guy and you look at the big picture, we're in a big sideways range. We're trading toward the lower end of the range. No real technical damage. We're still holding above the low from a couple of weeks ago and then the low from a couple of weeks before that. So we still got that intact. But that double top up there here with the high coming last week, when we saw that November bean 1484, and that goes back to the second hop at a high at 1489 on July 29th. That failure there, a little bit concerning. So I think the not certain bulls have already moved out of the market, and now they're going to probably, with today's close under the 50-day and 40-day moving average, under the 200-day, we're in jeopardy of really testing the bulls overall. And yet we had good export, again, another export sales announced to unknown destination. So it seems like we're selling some beans, but we don't know how much because we don't have any weekly export sales data, which is kind of important to have this time of year to kind of know if you're setting the tone. And I don't know, I guess it'll come out or be fixed sometime in the next 2 weeks after the 12th or somewhere. The 12th mm-hmm. is the next supply and demand report. But risk off in the beans again. The crop just looks better. If you look at the pro farmer numbers of last week, look at the USDA, both kind of aligned around that 51.5, 52. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty solid crop right now. Some really important rains here this past weekend, solidifying some yields where it did fall, or at least negating in areas that aren't getting rain. So probably, you know, holding the crop size. Wheat, that is really just a mixed bag, kind of ugly here today. Worldwide, same thing. We continue to look at a market that's chopping a sideways pattern. Had a chance to kind of break out to the top side here three or four sessions ago, failed. Technically, no damage on the charts despite today's down day. We're still right in the middle of the range.
Well, Brian, fantastic stuff. I know if producers want to have a conversation and talk a little more in depth about their individual operation, you and the team there, Total Farm Marketing, can help them do that. What's going to be the best way to get a hold of you?
It's what we do all day long, and we do a good job of it. 800-334-9779. That's our phone number. Best way to get a hold of us. We're also have a website, totalfarmmarketing.com, or you can email me if you want to just shoot me an email with a question on it, brian@totalfarmmarketing.com, and that's Brian with a Y, B-R-Y-A-N.
Well, again, totalfarmmarketing.com, and Brian, always appreciate some time and insight, and I know I am on the go for Farm Progress Show, but thanks for jumping on with us for a little bit here on this Thursday, and we will talk to you again next week, sir. Have a fantastic holiday weekend.
Thank you, Jesse. My pleasure.
And again, that is Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. Appreciate a few minutes of his time and some analysis here as we wrap up our week at the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. Great 3 days here on the grounds in Boone, and looking forward to sharing more conversations coming up here on the show over the next couple of days. That's going to do it for today's episode of Market Talk. Have a fantastic rest of your day. I'm Jesse Adlin. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. you can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.